Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay in the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Silver Screen Roll Podcast Network. I'm your host, Serena Merchant, joined by Anthony Irwin for a show that I wish was not called I Love Basketball Today, but here we are. The Lakers just lost to the Sacramento Kings 125-116. It was gross. This is what I'm going to say about it. There was a gross game of basketball, particularly in the second half. And I am not pleased by the fact that we have to watch 40 more of these games. So that's where I stand right now, Anthony. How are you?
I can't take credit for this because we had so many people, making this joke in our mentions. This is the I loathe basketball
podcast, right? There we go.
Like, this is where you know, on nights like this, like losing to the Kings is bad enough.
Sure.
Right. Like it just sucks, you know? And like, maybe that's why I am as reactionary as I am tonight. Like where I legitimately thought to myself tonight, Sabrina, that I think the Lakers would be better off with any other Laker getting those late minutes than Russ. Like it's not like a, you know, see if you could trade him and get like a decent player. It's like, no, trade him and
to clear his salary and stop playing.
I don't even care about his salary. Like I don't even care. I don't think like tonight, in the fourth quarter and in the third quarter, like basically the second half, he wasn't a good basketball player, right? Like he was just bad. And on both sides of the ball, you know, there was a play, I believe it was in the third quarter, where there was a long rebound and he's standing there on the sideline. And I think De'Aaron Fox saved it. The ball was bouncing towards Russ and De'Aaron Fox saved it right over the top of Russ's head to a shooter standing right next to Russ, and Russ at no point there even like moved his hands, you know? And that's him. I wish he would have that kind of apathy on offense because he would just get out of the way. You know, I, again, it might just be like the way that they lost, you know, they were up double digits to Sacramento, and maybe it stings that much more because you're watching Buddy Hield on the other sideline and I'm always going to be sitting there wondering.
I am like, always comparing Russell Westbrook and Buddy Hield.
Yeah. Like maybe, and all of this is contextual and all of this is kind of circumstantial, but this is again, one of those games that even his most like ardent defenders can't sit there and say he isn't the problem. He is like, I'm just going to say it. He's the problem. He's making $44 million. He's playing like a $4 million player. He's not, you can't have production that far away from your cap number. You can't. That's going to kill. Like that's been the case since he got his Supermax contract everywhere he's been. And now he's like the worst version of himself where he's not super athletic. He still can't shoot and he still makes crap decisions. Like that's where we are with Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, I mean, I compare Russ to Hield on a regular basis, and I also find myself just pouring through Wizards box scores, looking at KCP's numbers.
The just Lakers, all the time. the Lakers traded Kuz and stuff for a player who is not as good as Kuzma right now.
Like, I've mentally gotten over the Kyle Kuzma of it all because I firmly believe he needed a new situation to stretch his wings.
Yeah, he wouldn't be this good on the Lakers.
I'd gotten on board with him going to Sacramento anyway. It's really the Kentavious Caldwell-Pope part of it, because you actually mentioned this on Twitter that Russ's mistakes are so loud. And that's honestly the first thing that I always think of when I think of KCP, is that his mistakes are so loud. I mean, the guy like had a baseline dunk today. I'm not the season and like just got hung by the side of the backboard. Like, who does that?
Only KCP. But I miss him. Like, that highlight made me miss him
so much.
Because that's only like a 2-point L.
Yeah.
Right.
And you can bet your ass that KCP, after missing that outside of the backboard, sprinted back on defense. Okay. Yeah. Because that is what KCP does. He runs hard on both ends of the floor, which is something that Russell Westbrook does not do, because the sequence that really encapsulated this whole mess of a night for me was with 40 seconds left in the third quarter, when the Lakers are trailing by 6. And you're thinking, oh, okay, well, this is a nice time to like maybe get 2 more points before the end of the quarter.
Perfectly set up for a 2-for-1.
Yeah, perfectly set up for a 2-for-1. What does Russ do? Russ, realizing that there is a 2-for-1 opportunity, so one good thing, takes a wing 3 as the first shot, which is where I'm going to stop right away and say, that is not worth a 2-for-1. That is objectively, because that is, you're punting away one possession. Yeah. So you're not getting the 2-for-1 at this point.
Yeah.
Not only does he take the wing 3.
That's Joe Judge QB sneaking. Yes, on the
3rd and 9. So he misses the 3, because of course he misses the 3. The rebound is so long, he makes no effort to get back on defense. And that's an easy 2 for Sacramento on the other end.
Mm-hmm.
Now, an important note here is that there is still more than 24 seconds left on the clock at this point, because Russ has mismanaged the time and let them have such a fast possession that you've ruined the 2-for-1 opportunity already. And then on the ensuing possession, he has some garbage little thing in the paint that he turns over.
Yep.
Sacramento's able
again
to
doesn't
come,
hustle back.
Again does not hustle back. This is all I was watching for. I was like, I don't even care if Sacramento scores on this possession. I'm literally only watching to see if Russell Westbrook crosses half court. He does not cross half court. And lo and behold, who is it that hits the 3 for Sacramento to end the quarter?
Buddy.
One Buddy Hield.
Who was sprinting hard, by the way.
Running like, hard. Yeah.
I noticed him sprinting hard because he ran from one corner on the other end of the court.
To the opposite wing. The
opposite corner.
Yeah.
Like he literally like the longest route that you can run in the sport. And he did so sprinting, and he gets, the wide open 3-pointer. You know, Reeves was just kind of screwed on that, but there was nothing he could have done there. Like when you're guarding the ball and the only other pass is to the corner, you have to give something up. And I don't even think he knew that Buddy was in the corner.
Yeah.
So like either you try to coax the pass and you deflect it, like that's best case scenario, or you don't see him there and you give up the 3. I feel bad for Russ, because on one hand, he didn't ask for all this pressure, right? Like
he asked to be traded to the Lakers.
Well, but he asked to be traded to the Lakers, but I like he didn't ask for like the entire season hinging upon his production. Because that's how it always was going to play out. Mm-hmm. And now this is the thing with the Supermax contract, is that like all of these guys can ask for that Supermax contract. All like that is perfectly within their rights. They have earned it. If a team is willing to give it to them, it's like Jalen Rose always says, you are worth what a team is willing to pay you. Right. Mm-hmm. But how many teams would be willing to pay Russ $10 million next year? Like, honestly, I've spent way too much time thinking about this like over the course of the year. I don't know what his contract is going to look like next year, because he's not going to want to come off the bench.
I mean,
like,
he's opting in for sure.
Well, right. Or not next year, but after this contract. Yeah. So after this contract, he'll be
he's
a year
not getting
older.
The Chris Paul balloon payment over the next 4 years.
Probably
it's
not.
Not happening to Russ.
Probably not. You know, and so I just kind of find myself feeling bad for guys who are the lightning rod. Like I felt bad for Lonzo. I felt bad for D'Angelo Russell. I felt bad for now in this case, Russell Westbrook, where the person who is getting the lion's share of the blame is Russ. And I just inherently feel bad for that person. However, it's fair, you know, like you can talk about you know, there are other problems on the roster. There are other issues across the roster, and this is a flawed roster and all of this, but like, why is it as flawed as it is? Why do they have to lean as heavily as they do on veteran minimum players? And the reason is because they went out and traded for Russell Westbrook. And in order to trade for Russell Westbrook, you now, like, all right, you could say the one fair counter is that they didn't, like, trading for Russell Westbrook didn't have to mean that you let Alex Caruso walk. However,
I wish I had a counter for how long it takes us to get to Alex Caruso on every one of these.
Yeah, I know. Well, but like, because like that's.
No, you're absolutely right. Trading for like, Russell Westbrook did mean that much of the roster would have to be filled out with minimum contracts. It did not mean that the Lakers had to get rid of Alex Caruso.
They chose to do that. That was so in that sense. That is something that, again, like Rob Pelinka should and frankly, Jeannie Buss, because of how much leaking and reporting there is on her not wanting to pay for Alex Caruso's contract. And then, you know, I've also heard people from the Lakers say that, like, Rob undervalued Caruso and that LeBron undervalued Caruso. All of those things can be true. They didn't want to pay. And the reason that they didn't want to pay is because they undervalued Caruso. And like, that is not something that you would point to Russ for. However, it is kind of like an unintended consequence of the Russ trade, because if you don't trade for Russ, then you don't have as difficult a time with your luxury taxes. Cause you have, like, once you trade for Russ, you have 44 mil in Russ, another 40 ish for LeBron, another 40 ish for Anthony Davis. Like, after that, you're going to be in the luxury tax, and that's where the Lakers kind of find themselves. And it's because they traded for a player who was already on a diminished player. Like, we've already seen he's dealt with injuries. He was somebody who, like, Pete and I were talking back and forth on Twitter the other day, and how, like, you know, the Lakers had to put AD on Russ. And it's like, yeah, but I feel like that's an oversimplification, right? Because they put AD on Russ so that he could go rover. Like, he could go rogue. And the reason you can go rogue on Russ, and we saw this with Sacramento tonight, when he catches the ball at the 3-point line, especially in a night like tonight where he clearly didn't have it, it's like they were actually paying attention to social distancing rules. Like, it was like that.
I thought you were going to say the Kings were actually paying attention to a scouting report, which would be a bigger deal. Well,
that is pretty crazy. Maybe it was like on accident. They're like, oh, tight. We have to stay away from people. I could rant and I could ramble forever about this. And it is somewhat of an oversimplification to just say Russ is the problem. Even if you don't want to go that far, he for damn sure hasn't been the solution.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously Russ is not responsible for the team building because he is not the GM here. I don't believe that he had a say in the Caruso situation or, you know, any of the major decisions that the Lakers had this offseason. But I do think we know for a fact that Russ okayed the trade to Los Angeles. The reason why the Wizards were willing to pursue a deal with the Lakers was because Russ gave the go-ahead. So you know you're coming to the Lakers. You know what playing for the Lakers means. You grew up in LA. You absolutely know what the pressure of playing in LA means. You know that you're going to be playing next to LeBron James. What did you think was going to happen with regards to having the ball in your hands? Like, that's why I don't have any really sympathy for Russ, because
that's fair.
You had to have known the situation you were walking into. And two, like, knowing that you're playing with LeBron James, maybe you could play a little defense. Like, maybe you could try to do some other things. Like, I don't know, screen for LeBron once in a while. That could be more of a Frank Vogel thing than a Russell Westbrook thing. But
yeah, we got to talk about that.
There's just so many ways that Russell Westbrook could make himself a more useful player. And has not in this particular situation. But before we get to the screen thing, I do want to talk about Russell Westbrook's dalliance turnovers, because this is going on in our Slack right now. So Russ had the game with 9 turnovers, right? A couple weeks back. Mm-hmm. And since then has sort of been on like a personal crusade to prove that he doesn't need to turn the ball over.
Yeah.
Which is so funny.
What his assist numbers are since he decided to stop turning the ball over.
Yeah. So let's look that up real quick, because I believe it was was it Minnesota that he put up the 9 turnovers against? And he mentioned in his post game that there's sort of a creativity tax for the way that he plays, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
which is fair.
Turnovers are kind of, absolutely. The higher usage guys are going to have more turnovers. And like basically Chris Paul is like the only exception to this rule. Like he is a master of ball control in a way that just most lead guards are not. And that's fine because I think Chris Paul has plenty of other things that I don't particularly like about his game. So if you're going to have the ball a lot and you're going to create a lot of plays for your teammates, you're going to turn the ball over. That's fine. Mm-hmm. And so now we're in this like this weird ass simulation where Russ is trying to prove that he doesn't have to turn the ball over, but simultaneously is taking away his best skill at this point. Legitimately, his best skill is creating plays for his teammates because he's an excellent passer. That is the number one thing about Russell Westbrook is he's a really, really good passer. And he creates angles that like other guards don't see. Like that's one of the things that makes him great. And if he's trying to prove something about his turnovers, like he's just diminishing the best part about him. And it's this like stupid mind feud that he has with the LA media because he's claiming that he's not being used
this is Bill in like Orm's the
proper
fault.
Role.
This is Dave McMenamin's fault. Come on, Dave.
No, I really do believe that Russell Westbrook takes this criticism and he like internalizes it because he's been telling people that he's not being used in the way that he wants to be used, right? Like this is a role that is different for him and it's not like the whole let Russ be Russ thing has like, you know, reached a crescendo here. And so it's so strange to me because he's like deliberately trying not to be who he wants to be, but then like it's not a good version of a basketball player either. So what is he proving?
So he had that 9 turnover game. And by the way, like it was so before the 9 turnover game, you go back to December 19th against Chicago, 6 turnovers, the game after that, 7, the game after that, 5, the game after that, 3 is pretty good. 3 is like the perfect number. Like I would like I'd to go see with Russ 4. At like 3 turnovers.
4 is fine then, with me.
And then the game after that, 7, 5, 4, and then the 9 turnover game. Since then, he's had 0, 3, 0, and 1 turnovers. His assists, 2, 13. And by the way, in the game that he had 13 assists and only 3 turnovers, which to me, again, is the perfect game. The Lakers beat the crap out of the Atlanta Hawks.
Plus 22 for Russ in that game.
Yes. Yeah. Like that's, it's so, so. I've always thought so. Like Kobe actually said this back when Russ was like still really trying to prove himself, trying to win an MVP, and he said that like Russ is somebody who he really thinks reminds him of himself, like in terms of approach to the game and love of the sport and competitive nature and stuff, which is like the highest compliment that you could probably get. He said that I believe back in like 2005 or 2009. Russ is
probably since, 9 because 2005 Russ was like not even at UCLA.
All right, so it's 2009. Yeah. him and Kobe and LeBron
losing your high like, school just, there. That's where Kobe was spending his nights.
So 2009 was I believe pre MVP Russ, right?
Yeah.
And since Russ has won his MVP, and he had this quote, you know, a few years back this year where he was like, look, I'm going to do whatever I can. I always do whatever I can to try to make the team better. If we win a championship, cool. If not, I'm going to be fine. And he got applauded for it. And like, you know, to a certain extent, yeah, like work-life balance and not putting that kind of pressure on yourself. Like, okay, we can applaud that. But also, that's not Kobe. You know, like that's not
Kobe
that's
was
not,
the one who said he'd rather miss the playoffs than get all the way to the finals and lose because it was the same wasted season.
Right. Kobe's the guy who said, like, you know, I prefer championships over friends because banners hang forever. You know, like when the Lakers traded for Russ, there was a whole bunch of like Kobe era parent. Kobe era, this is somebody that Kobe really loved. And I think Kobe really loved him in 2009. Kobe, if he was on this team with Russ. Would I mean I shudder to think
we should take all of the 2014 to 16 Lakers and Russ and rank them in the order that Kobe hated them.
I can't imagine Kobe would be, and like this is actually the point that I told you that I wanted to make heading into this episode, and I'm glad that it happened kind of organically. I would love to see LeBron not passive aggressively, but aggressively get after Russ after he takes that shot that he takes with 50 seconds left in regulation here and it basically ends the game. Mm-hmm. You know, that he holds the ball for 12 seconds and takes a three-pointer that everybody in the arena knew he was going to take.
A possession where LeBron doesn't touch the ball. Like, what are we doing?
Right, right. And by the way, like, this was one of the criticisms I made of the deal when they made it, was like, there are going to be stretches or there are going to be possessions that LeBron should always be touching the ball late in the game, and Russ isn't going to think so. Like, Russ isn't going to think that's the case. After that possession, I would love to see, because we can only imagine what Kobe would say there. Kobe would walk over to Russ and say, "What the bleep was that? What the bleep?" And then after the game, he would say, "No, man, we got to do better than that," you know? And, you know, a lot is made of the reactions that LeBron will have off of the ball, right? Where his shoulders will drop, or he'll be calling for the ball and then the shot goes off. And then he just like drops his hands and just like walks the other way with his head down. I would love for LeBron to go over to Russ and say, "We can't have that. Like, that is not a good shot." And until I think LeBron really does that or calls out Russ publicly, Russ isn't changing. And he might not even change after that. But we know that the passive aggressive stuff to this point hasn't worked. And Russ really needs to be better.
Who is holding Russ accountable, right? Because we heard so many stories about the 1920 team, how like LeBron and AD set the tone on both ends of the floor. Like, because they played so hard defensively, everybody had to play that way, right? Mm-hmm. And Anthony Davis has not been the same player since then. So he is incapable of, you know, holding people accountable while he's on the bench half the time. And LeBron, that just hasn't been his MO when Russ has been here, right? Like,
yeah,
I don't see him calling him out the way he does when KCP refused to take a shot, like, you know, and he'd like mm-hmm. yell at him, like, "Those are the shots you have to take," right? Like, there hasn't been any moment like that I can think of where he has called out Russ for doing something incorrectly. And like, there have been opportunities.
Yes, there have most definitely been plenty of plays for LeBron to say, "What the bleep?" Yeah, and like, that's, you know, and by the way, part of the reason why Russ probably won't get traded this year is because it would be everybody who was a part of that decision admitting, "Yeah, we screwed up on that one," right? And one of those people is LeBron. Mm-hmm. And so, like, all right, if you are unwilling to admit, whoops, if you're unwilling to, like, you know, passively admit, "Whoopsie daisy," then make it work. Do whatever you have to do to make it work. And I think in this case, one of the things that he needs to do in order to make this work is, "Hey, Russ, what the bleep?"
Yeah.
You know, and it's the kind of thing where, like, if he and Russ, like, this is, I think, part of LeBron being super brand aware too. He understands that, like, if he and Russ at any point look at each other in a weird direction and somebody mm-hmm. catches on camera, whether video or picture, like, that's going to be one of those things that's going to be a talking point for like the next week on mm-hmm. the new version of The Jump, whatever it is. And like, if you're LeBron and you are as press savvy as he is and publicly savvy as he is, he's really trying to avoid that moment. I just think it's what the Lakers need. I really think it's that. And this is what leadership is. It's not always easy.
No, it's not.
There have been times where, you know, Harrison has pulled me aside and said, "Hey, man, you probably shouldn't scream at Cooper in the Silver Screen and Roll Slack. That's probably not productive for anybody." And that probably wasn't very easy for Harrison to do. And yet it was the right thing to do. It was the right thing to say. And you know, I have since watched the things that I say in the Silver Screen and Roll Slack. And then this is one of those spots where I think, like, with Russ, I think you really do need to kind of rein him in a little bit and say, "Hey, man, like, this, that's not the shot that we need there. We had all the momentum." And multiple times over the course of the game, the Lakers had all the momentum. And like, three of those instances, Russ did something Russell Westbrook in that just screwed over the team.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's in LeBron's best interest, even like brand-wise, because think of like how good it would be for him if he turned this Lakers season around, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
How well that would reflect on LeBron James if that managed to happen, which the way I'm talking, you can tell that I don't believe that's possible. But if LeBron were to Make it happen.
John Legend. Like, this is us singing Imagine. Right? COVID is running rampant and we're singing Imagine.
Yeah. You know, I over the summer, I had expressed some positive feelings about having like an LA icon and Russell Westbrook come back, mm-hmm. and someone who grew up a Laker fan coming to play for this team, and how fun that was going to be. And I mean, I don't think Russ is having fun. I'm not having fun. I have the most fun watching the Lakers when the Dear Oklahoma boys play, because that is my favorite thing about this year's Laker team.
Yeah,
we hit on Austin Reeves a little bit earlier, but like, I think his best game as a Laker so far.
Yeah.
He was wonderful.
He got a haircut. The glow up was
the vibes are important. Like, you can't, if you don't look good, you don't play well. Like, Kyle Kuzma tweeted this the other day, right? Like, I hate to bring everything back to Kuzma. Like, you know, look good, feel good, play good. Like, that's a real
thing.
This
is why I have never been able to play good. Like, I'm incapable of looking good.
Yeah, Austin was awesome. Get him as many minutes as possible, please, Frank, because there's a very clear type of player who succeeds next to LeBron James. And even though Austin Reeves doesn't look like an NBA player, like, we've been through this for the last 4 years, he can play. He makes the right decisions with basketball. He competes on defense. And like, there were so many sequences where I was like, oh yeah, Austin, like, that was awesome. You know?
Yeah.
And Malik Monk.
Well, making the right cut. Like, making the right cut.
Yeah.
Knowing
when a great pass to Avery Bradley on a cut too, actually. That was really good earlier in the game.
And also,
or Avery just gets blocked on layups just over.
You know, I mean, that's just, you know, that's just the Avery Bradley experience. But like Austin Reeves also, I thought, notably in this one, shot seven three-pointers.
Oh yeah.
7 3-pointers for Austin Reeves, 7 of 10 from the field.
Get him up, Austin.
Well, that's honestly kind of what the Lakers need. They mm-hmm. need him. Like, he is very good at attacking closeouts, and it does create other opportunities for other people. But if the opportunity you're creating is a Russell Westbrook wide open 3-pointer or an Avery Bradley wide open 3-pointer, I would rather Reeves just shoot the first one in the first place. And which, like, by the way, like, that's not kind of how he operates. Like, he's not the kind of player he was a bucket at one point, but
he'll get more trigger happy as it goes along, because you're absolutely right. Like, the process of drive and kick doesn't make a whole lot of sense when, like, the next drive and kick leads to a sub 30% three-point shot.
Right. Yeah.
So, and Wayne Ellington has proven, like, unplayable. I get that he was in the game for like 9 minutes today. I have no recollection of that happening other than him just airballing 1-3.
How dare you? That is plus 12 Wayne Ellington.
What happened? Was it all in that second quarter run?
Yeah, it was basically. Okay. That's the only time. Although, like, I'm not sitting here and defending plus minus, because it is a flawed stat. Yeah, like, this is one of those, like, clearly hilarious instances.
I just play Wayne Ellington for 48 minutes. I think we figured out the solution.
Duh. but I will say, though, like, with Ellington, the Kings did care when he would go up to shoot. You know, they did care that he would go up and he would come off of a screen and they would have two defenders over there. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, he went 0 for 2 from 3-point range from 3-point range and the field. Nothing to write home about, you know, for Ellington in this one. But, you know, the Lakers have been desperate for any kind of player whose very presence on the court just bends the defense. Mm-hmm. That's why Monk has looked as good as he has, on top of being like, Monk is Ellington, but if he made the shots, you know, and
plus Monk can actually still drive to the basket and utilize his handle at this point. Like,
right.
Ellington's just past that point.
But I think, like, this is kind of why I'm pretty invested in Ariza getting his legs underneath him, because he's somebody that defenses care about getting shots up. This is why when Nunn is healthy, that's where he's going to be really valuable, because, again, defenses, like, I remember, like, it was my favorite moments playing basketball was you walk up the court, you touch the ball, and the other coach is screaming, shooter, shooter, shooter. And it, like, I was just like, you can think that, you know. but like, for like, you could see the effect that Ellington has on the defense around him. You can see the effect that Ariza and eventually Nunn will have around him. And this is one of those things that Reeves getting 7 3-pointers up, I don't think it's going to happen this year, because defenses tend to take a little while to actually adjust. But if they don't adjust and he shoots 7 3-pointers and he knocks down 3 or 4 of them, then that's a really, really good game for a player that the Lakers don't really have another version of.
There was one sequence where I forget who initiated the driving kick, but there were 3 Lakers shooters standing within like 12 feet of each other. Like it was one on the corner, one like barely at the break line, and one like on the wing. And it was Westbrook, Bradley, and a 3rd guy. And I was just like, this is the stupidest idea of spacing I've ever seen. When I'm back,
Dale is in charge of all of this, Sabrina.
22 Lakers. This is the picture that I am going to remember.
It's like, oh man, what was that old dating show that, oh man, what was that called? Where the person would be sitting there on the stool and they couldn't see the 3 contestants and they would ask the questions.
Yeah, gosh,
there's
is
so
there's like they're, Match Game. No, that's something else.
No,
something else.
No, it was like, man, oh, there are people sitting.
I know what you're talking about. Zooey Deschanel hosts a new version of this.
Oh, really? All right. Yeah, I'm going to watch that. But like, there are people sitting in the car right now screaming at me for whatever that is called.
Is it literally just called The Dating Game? Yeah, I think it's just called The Dating Game.
Yeah, there it is. Those of you who are screaming, I apologize. But like, whoever was driving to the basket was like, behind door number 1. It's like literally 3 doors that you could throw the ball to. and Reeves was the right call. I think there are some positives to take away from this. Like, I think Reeves has to start. I we have reached that point, at least until Nunn and or AD come back. I think Reeves has to start. I think, you know, Bradley is regressing to the mean as a shooter. You know, he was plus 40%, I think, to this point on limited attempts, but still like 0-4 from 3-point range, 2-9 from the field tonight. And again, like, we keep on saying like Avery Bradley perimeter stopper, De'Aaron Fox goes for 29 tonight. Ja Morant just rips him to shreds on both sides of the ball the other night. Like it's just like player after player after player after player is just looking at Avery Bradley and seeing an actual barbecued chicken that is sitting there at the top of the key waiting for them as they cross half court.
To be fair, 2 years ago when Avery Bradley was on the Lakers, right before the hiatus, we had this back-to-back against Memphis and New Orleans, and Avery was excellent against Ja Morant. Absolutely excellent.
Yeah.
That's 2 years Frank ago. Vogel's frame of reference. Clearly, I don't even need to say if. That is Frank Vogel's frame of reference.
Yes.
So that's what we're going on.
So I think Bradley's role needs to be kind of – and like, by the way, it is going to be. Like it has to be
when Nunn comes in, it's absolutely diminished.
It has to be diminished because it's between him basically and Reeves. And I think Reeves just being like an inch or two taller makes him a more valuable player. Mm-hmm. And again, somebody
shooter,
can shoot is important. And somebody who like lives up to his defensive reputation because he doesn't have a defensive reputation. Right?
They attack him all the time.
And he does like there were a couple possessions where, you know, he would try to stay in front of, I think he actually fell over tonight because of Davion Mitchell.
Yeah, Mitchell got him,
Yeah, but other than like, you know, and there are a couple other possessions that he gets knocked off of his spot because he weighs half as much as I do. Mm-hmm. But for the most
part. To be fair, I said before I knew how you're going to finish that sentence. So. It was just a gut reflex.
Gut reflex, huh?
That was deliberate. I'll give you that.
I think Bradley's role has to diminish. And like, until further notice, shouldn't Russ's? It should, right? Politically speaking, it won't, but it probably should. Like, he played 37 minutes tonight. I don't know that he needs to play more than 30 minutes. I really don't, especially once AD
is averaging 32 minutes. I feel like we should just set the bar there for us.
If he goes above 30, like, what is he doing playing 37 minutes on a night? He goes 2-14 from the floor. Like, you play 30, you play above your average if you clearly have it going, but he didn't, you know? And
like, it's just the missed layups just kill me.
No, but yeah.
He missed four shots directly at the rim today and another that was like basically right outside the charge circle. And on none of them did I think like, oh, this is a good possession for the Lakers. Like, the lack of touch is astounding, but I don't really want to talk about Russ anymore.
From in the paint tonight.
Cause we've sufficiently, I think, exhausted the Russell Westbrook discussion for today, I would say.
Also, like, my lawyers will be in touch because Harrison and I had the last conversation anybody has to have about Russ.
Right, right. That is correct.
Ben Rosales will be reaching out. Yeah. 15 minutes or so.
That's a good name to pull up. But just, I do want to have one little conversation before we head out here. Just, the Lakers have been playing small, right, with LeBron James at center. It had been Stanley Johnson for a little while at that four. Trevor Ariza got the start today. I understand that because Ariza needs to get his legs underneath him because he looks terrible. But he had a couple nice defensive possessions today, but like it's still a ways away from me.
You can still hear him getting off the bench.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't want that. I don't really like the small lineup. I'm kind of it's really strange to me that the Lakers played traditional pick and roll defense with the small lineup, and then Dwight got in and they started switching things. And then like we're forced into situations where, oh, Dwight's on the perimeter on Tyrese Haliburton. Let's send a double and then compromise the rest of our backside rotations. Which I realize is not necessarily a problem with the small lineup, just how it's being implemented. But for many reasons, I am like eager for Anthony Davis to get back, but most of all, just to slide LeBron back to the four, because this defense the Lakers are playing, or literally not playing, is unsustainable. Like the amount of dribble penetration they allowed today was absurd. And it's a pattern, right? Like the only reason they've been getting away with it is because they beat a bunch of really bad teams.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, do you like the small lineup? I mean, am I just...
Well, no, I'm glad that you mentioned this because so sometimes team will go to zone in over the course of a game just for the sake of like breaking a team's rhythm.
Yeah.
And they'll go to it. And the whole time they're in it, their fans will be saying like, the smart fans will be saying like, all right, this is working, but you know, you don't want to stay in it like a possession or two longer than you have to, because those two possessions are going to be brutal.
One or threes and you're done.
then like all of the progress that you made by throwing them off of their rhythm has just been squandered by the two wide open threes that were created by an NBA team realizing, oh yeah, that's right. All we have to do is put somebody at the free throw line and this zone is broken. Mm-hmm. But so for this small ball lineup, and I'm glad that you mentioned that they were beating bad teams, like, I understand why the Lakers would want to shift their identity, because it means less DeAndre Jordan. And it means, you know, LeBron gets to really take full advantage of what he is really good at, which is picking apart defenses that are spread super thin. Mm-hmm. The Lakers don't have big enough shooters. Like they have, in terms of sheer number of shooters, you know, you have a decent number of shooters that you could have on the court at the same time. The problem is they're all like 6'4" and under.
Right.
You know, and that's where the Lakers really kind of get in trouble, is that like you go small, and if you want to be big at all, and it hurts that Melo didn't play tonight, but again, like should it really hurt that Carmelo Anthony didn't play?
They closed with a lineup that had Austin Reeves at power forward today.
Yeah. And
that's
rough. It's too small. And I think they have to go too small because all of their shooters are super duper small. Mm-hmm. And especially until Trevor actually gets his legs underneath him, which like might not happen. Like he's old. He's 36 years old.
He was on the 2009 Lakers championship team.
Like, and like, that's why, by the way, it's really important that they maybe trade for a wing, because if you trade for a Jeremy Grant, or if you trade for, Lakers played against Harrison Barnes tonight, if you trade for any of these wings,
hell, I am like hoping for Robert Covington at this point.
Yeah. If you trade for any of these wings, and by the way, the Covington THT swap, like as a foundational, like kind of trade, makes a lot of sense for, I think, Portland, because I think they're heading towards a rebuild anyway. And here's a young player Covington hasn't been good this year, so the Lakers get a buy low candidate for a buy low send out player.
Yeah.
Anyway, but like for you know, the Lakers, because their shooters are all so small, they have to go like hyper small, you know? And it's like Spaceballs where, you know, they go into hyper speed and then the bad guys go into like hyper diaper speed and they go like right past them and they look over the top of themselves and it's like, holy crap, they went plaid, you know? And it's just like the Lakers have to go that far in that direction because they really don't have any other options to be able to take advantage of why you go small in the first place. And it, like, this is why I thought it was kind of fool's goldy, not fully fool's gold, because I do think there's something to be found there, but it felt kind of fool's gold-ish to say like, oh man, the Lakers went, they won what, 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 6 or 5 out of 7, man, look at them go against Sacramento,
Minnesota, and Portland.
Way to go, Lakers. You know, they beat the Atlanta Hawks, who are about to have a fire sale, you know, and
it's got a couple wings out of the Hawks.
Exactly. Some Hawk wings. I wonder if Hawk wings taste good, but like, I think you're onto something in saying that they do need to, cause they won a championship being bigger, stronger, faster than everybody. Like they did that 2 seasons ago, less than 2 years ago. And I'm sorry, but some like 5-game stretch against bad teams is going to make me think like this, that's an identity that the Lakers should scrap. Not when your small lineups could be Anthony freaking Davis and LeBron freaking James at the 5 and 4. Yeah. All you need is like two decent wings and a point guard who isn't Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that composition of a lineup work within like 13 months at this recording.
Yeah.
But yeah, I understand, like, again, the reason why the Lakers have gone small makes perfectly sense to me, because you don't want to play DeAndre Jordan. You don't want to play Dwight Howard more than like 15 or 18 minutes a game. I get all that. I just think that if you're going to play small, you have to do the small lineup things. Like, you can't play traditional like drop coverage and like, you know, just allow guards to the rim and make LeBron this,
this
rim protector, which like, on the one hand, they need to conserve LeBron, and that's why they're playing this kind of defense so that he doesn't have to roam the perimeter as much. But like, when the help is your power forward of Trevor Ariza or your small forward of Malik Monk, like, things are going to go badly, and they have been going badly. And I just think that if you're going to play small, you have to lean into all of the small. Like, the reason the Houston Rockets were successful when they went small, and that was, you know, again, just like a second round team, which maybe it would have been different had like Westbrook and Harden not gotten COVID right before the bubble, whatever. But like, the reason it worked is because they successfully denied penetration because they actively switched everything. Like, the Lakers don't really deny anything. They let you get right to the rim every single time. So unless all of the players on the opposing team finish like Russell Westbrook does, like, it's a bad recipe. And
recipe.
Yeah. There we go. I don't like the style of it. I realize the Lakers have to lean into playing more offensively minded. I just wish there was a way to preserve some of their defensive principles. I'm sure like Frank stays up at night thinking about these things, because this is clearly not the way that he wants to play. It's just not, it's not good. Like, you're going to get nights when Monk is unconscious and like, it's fine. You can paper over some things, but at this point, like, the only way the Lakers can win is if LeBron is Herculean. And we saw today where he scored 34 points and like,
he wasn't
even Herculean. I don't even think this is like LeBron at his best. Like, this is like a normal LeBron James game. Okay. Like, we need more from LeBron. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's not even, you need good LeBron. You need incredible LeBron. And yeah, LeBron was just like very good today. And that wasn't enough against, like, let's repeat this, against a Sacramento team that had lost 5 in a row, did not have Rashawn Holmes. So like, what are we doing here? Yeah. Like, this is a game that the Lakers should have won. I mean, they started Marvin Bagley and Chimezie Metu, and like,
they didn't even have Damian Jones. I mean,
oh man, gosh, how did I forget that?
Could you imagine?
Could you imagine? all of those flubbed finishes around the rim from Metun Bagley, they would not have happened had Damian Jones been in the game.
Yeah. 90% field goal shooter on the Lakers.
Just what a legend. What a legend. He and Reeves should have their statues go up simultaneously.
Yeah. Well, so like the other thing too is like, again, this is where Russ isn't the problem. Like Russ isn't the problem. Well, I do contend he is the problem with the Lakers, but
acquisition of Russ is the problem, not like his person, you know?
Yeah, right. That's fairer. But if you're going small and Russ is a key cog in those small ball lineups, again, you aren't benefiting unless you have three other just surefire knockdown shooters. Mm-hmm. Russ isn't going to help you he's not going to benefit from the spacing that you would get from going super small. And that's where having only combo guards basically who can shoot, and your wings are Stanley Johnson, who was on the South Bay Lakers earlier this year, and Trevor Ariza, who
Talen Horton Tucker is, I guess, what they consider a wing.
And but Talen like shot well tonight.
Did
you
he?
Know, like he, well, no, he,
I think. I don't remember him shooting well. I remember him getting set up for a straight ahead three, and it did not go well.
Talen, why did I think that he shot better? Well,
to be fair, 4 of 9 for Talen is shooting better.
Yeah, that's true. But I thought he shot better from 3-point range. Like I thought I had seen a graphic over the course of the game that he was like 3 of 3. But anyway, but only 19 minutes from Talen Horton Tucker. That's interesting. Like, that's wild. That's their fourth highest paid player.
Third highest active player.
Yeah. But anyway, so I think, man, I think Rob Pelinka kind of sort of has to get fired. This is just a disastrous offseason. Because I have people in my mention saying, oh, whatever. It's just they'll just kick the can. This season happened. They'll just write it off and reset. How are you going to reset? Like, we saw what Rob Pelinka did with like a good roster and flexibility. This is a bad roster and no flexibility. We think he's saving this. But also, anyway,
does LeBron James say okay to just punting away a season? Like, I know that we did that in 2018-19, but LeBron had suffered the first serious injury, major, I would say, of his professional career.
Yeah.
And so that was a different situation where the Lakers still went hard at Anthony Davis at that trade deadline, but there was some leeway in terms of, we don't need to go all out this year because LeBron is unsure he'll be able to perform.
And he also clearly had more in the tank. Like he clearly, like he knew back then, but at 37, right? Like he has to be thinking, guys, come on.
When LeBron was 30 in Cleveland, he made them give up everything. Like that first year that he was in Cleveland, in comes J.R. Smith, in comes Iman Shumpert and Timofey Mozgov. And God. What a name. But LeBron does not waste time. Like every deadline, something happens. So to think that like the Lakers could just punt away the season and not try to do anything, like, I don't know. I mean, I guess Rob Pelinka's lawyers are going to call us after this because we're calling for his firing one too many times. But
I mean,
something's got it.
Yeah.
It's just insane how little flexibility the Lakers have. Like, I know you brought this up last year about how well positioned they were after winning the title, that they had all of these decent role players, like not great, like none of them were ever being confused for like all-star, you know, but decent role players on
good contracts,
value contracts. Like maybe Danny Green was the only one who was slightly overpaid. And that was only because we had to make him wait after the Kawhi thing was decided. Right.
Mm-hmm.
To go from that to like no trade assets, no picks, and the worst contract in the NBA is, you know, John Wall, give or take. But like, what a position to be in.
Yeah, I
13 months.
It's one of those spots where.
Sorry, 15. I keep counting wrong. 15 months.
Well, it's one of those situations where you ask yourself, if the Lakers were tanking, how different would it look?
Like, well, maybe they'd have their first round pick. Like, it wouldn't be the hands of, you know, Keith Parrish's Memphis Grizzlies.
How old is Bronny?
Bronny is a junior in high school.
So, okay. So 2027 is too far down the road. So they wouldn't already be tanking for Bronny now. No. But yeah, if the Lakers were trying to just bungle everything. And by the way, like I didn't hate last year's offseason. Like I didn't hate the Schroeder acquisition. I thought that
I was the only Danny, one that
and you were right, by the way, but like I thought Danny would be a diminished player, which like mm-hmm. you know, clearly yeah. he is. Like if he was on the Lakers right now, we'd be saying, shit, yeah. what can they get for Danny Green?
A lot of Wayne Ellington type comments about Danny Green coming
out. Right. But still, like, I didn't like the Trez signing. I would have preferred Ibaka, but Ibaka hasn't been good either with the Clippers. And, you know, this year I would have preferred Rudy Gay over Kendrick Nunn. But even Rudy missed a chunk of the start of the season and hasn't exactly lit the world on fire since. And so, like, even if you go, like, transaction by transaction, there are defenses of the moves that the Lakers have made. The only one I don't think there's a defense of right now is Russell Westbrook. And it just so happens that that's the biggest acquisition that you're going to make, because that was always going to be the biggest acquisition yeah. that you were going to make, because he makes the gross domestic
product of like half the countries around the world.
Yeah. Like he's like, they traded for Uzbekistan, yeah. you know, like it's just like they, and you know, for poor Russ, that's the expectation. And that's the point that I keep on coming back to is, you know, the expectation when you trade for Russ is that like now the expectation for Russ from Lakers fans is like, just don't bleep up. Just don't actively hurt us. Like that's all we're asking. And even if he doesn't actively hurt the Lakers, like Darius made this point the other day on Twitter, where like, even if Russ isn't actively hurting the Lakers, isn't turning the ball over and all of those things, you do still need from $44 million on your cap sheet more than like 7 points. You know, you need better shooting than two. Well,
the good thing
14.
Is he had 8 today, Anthony.
I mean, that I got to shut up now, you know? So like I think it does get kind of ridiculous with Russ in the sense of like, I think he is one of the Hall of Fame, like the all timers who gets the most scrutiny in NBA history, where if he played, I forget who I talked to this about, but if Russell Westbrook played in like the 90s, we would look at him, you know, pre-analytics and pre-scrutiny, where like we all have access to instant highlights and all mm-hmm. of these things. Like I think he would go down as one of the more popular players in NBA history. Problem is he's playing right now in 2022, and we do have access to all of this information, and we do know that like a player like Russell Westbrook cannot be making $44 million on a title contender. Like those two things are mutually exclusive. Russell Westbrook cannot be paid the way that he's playing and have that team have title aspirations. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend of mine from college the other day about, I mean, Russ was good at some point, right? Like there was a version of Russell Westbrook that we would have liked
he's
to
one
have
of my favorite, like,
on this Laker team.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite watches ever.
Yeah. Like I was thinking about the 2016 Western Conference Finals. Obviously, like Oklahoma City did not win that series, but they came so much closer than one might have thought. And like Russell Westbrook is the one who hit a game winner in that first game. And like he created meaningful problems for Stephen Curry, just like with his size and his activity on offense. And like, granted, that was 6 years ago. So it's not like the Avery Bradley timeline that I can compare him to.
but like,
I just hope that like this last act, which I mean, I don't even know if it's a last act. Russ is not that old, but like,
I don't know how
like,
many.
I'm already like editorializing his career, but there were so many good parts of Russell Westbrook, and I realize it's been a while, and the game has changed a little bit, and he you know, was always a tough fit next to another superstar. And unfortunately, the Lakers have a superstar who does not fit next to him. Like, I think we can shut the book on that.
Yeah.
And
I don't know. I don't know what superstar Russ fits next to.
Like Jokic?
Steph? Maybe Jokic, but Russ wants the ball. Like, this is the problem.
Yes, yeah.
It's not just,
I was going to say Cat, but Cat's not a superstar. He's just a star.
Yeah. Like, the issue is, and by the way, I would totally go for D'Angelo Russell, Russell Westbrook trade. But, like, who said that? I didn't say that.
I've been saying it for years.
It just was the other way around before. but so, like, the problem with Russ isn't just that, you know, he's a diminished player. He doesn't believe that he's a diminished player. He refuses to acknowledge, I can't dunk anymore. Like, all of those. And maybe he kind of sort of has, like, where he's not trying to dunk as much anymore, but, like, he still isn't finishing at the rim. You know, was he 1 of 5 again tonight?
Yeah,
from inside the paint. And you know, this is somebody who wants the ball down the stretch, and he shouldn't want the ball down the stretch. He can't have the ball down any possession. Like, every Sacramento fan, I would imagine, and I can distinctly remember feeling this way in the opposite direction, where, like, anytime Doug Christie had the ball in those series against the Lakers, I was so ecstatic. I was like, oh, hell yeah. This is a stop. Let's go. Get ready to run, guys, because this guy's airballing it. And I think, like, that was basically the possessions that Russ had tonight against Sacramento, where Sacramento fans are watching him with the ball in that left wing, and they're going, all right, let's go. How the turns have tabled, you MFers.
Yeah. Well, now that we've gotten our mandated Sacramento Kings bashing out of this, out of the way,
better now.
We have gone on for about an hour about how depressing this was, and we've barely even touched on this game, to be perfectly honest.
Like 20 minutes.
The majority of this is not even covered tonight's game. Like, it's just. But this is the type of reaction that Russell Westbrook has engendered for basically his entire NBA career. And unfortunately, he's no longer in Oklahoma City. He's in Los Angeles. And that means that he has podcasters like you and I who talk about him every single day of the week. So this is what he signed up for. Because, again, let's be very clear. He agreed to this trade to the Lakers.
Yeah.
He wanted to be here. He knew who was going to be on the team. It was a bad idea then. It has played out basically no better or worse than I think anyone expected. Like, I don't think this is worst case scenario. You know, the Lakers are still 500. They're still in playoff contention or whatever. Like, a couple more wins are back up at the sixth seed. But it obviously has not gone as well as some of the most ambitious people would have hoped for. And Russell Westbrook is no, like, Vince Carter, right? He's not setting his star ambitions aside as he ages.
No.
Deferring to anybody else. Like, no, he is Russell Westbrook through and through. This is who he is. It's not a very good fit. It was not a very good fit tonight when they played the Sacramento Kings. And God, I wish I had more optimism for what is to come, but the Lakers are about to go on a Grammy trip. And like, okay, the Grammys are not happening at the same time, which is just a delightful moniker for this trip. The schedule is about to get hard. Like, this is always when the Lakers schedule gets hard, when football stops and they're like, oh, the best draw on television now, Lakers games. Let's make sure they play all of the good teams.
Yeah.
This is the part of the season we are entering. And Russell Westbrook is not exactly the guy who elevates his game against better teams. He's always the one who pads his stats against the bad teams. Mm-hmm. And then you forgive him against the other teams because he has banked you wins.
Mm-hmm.
The Lakers have not banked wins. We're not in that position.
Nope.
So
21-21.
Things could get ugly. And I'm just bracing myself for that possibility.
Oh my God.
What are you looking at?
So apparently the Kings Arena at the end of the game said the ice cold player of the game was Russell Westbrook.
That is a true statement.
I mean, yeah. You don't often see that.
These are the kind of things you can do when a player is not returning to your arena for the rest of the season.
Good Lord. So I, you know, like you mentioned, you know, Lakers haven't banked wins. So our friend Eric Steven, Tribula LA, SB Nation, tweeted the Lakers have been 2-2, 3-3, 5-5, 8-8, 9-9, 10-10, 11-11, 12-12, 13-13, 16-16, 19-19, and are now 21-21. This is a mediocre team, everybody.
It is like, average. This is an average team.
This is like I root for Kirk Cousins. I know mediocrity when I see it, and this is freaking mediocrity. So unless something seriously changes, and like by the way, so the Vikings, by the way, this year fired their GM, fired their coach, probably gonna trade Kirk Cousins, probably gonna trade Adam Thielen and just start this rebuild or whatever. And I'm really excited about it because I don't have to sign up for mediocrity anymore. And that's why like I'm at that stage, or I'm pretty damn close to that stage with Russell Westbrook, where I'm like, just get rid of him, and it might make the team less talented
in the short term or something.
Yeah. But I don't have to watch this anymore. And that's, I'm probably like 8 out of 10 of the steps there.
Yeah. I mean, before you said the Vikings, I was going to say, this is a classic North Turner 8-8 season. Like just completely.
You're a Chargers fan. Exactly.
One of the top three worst decisions of my life was choosing to be a Chargers fan.
Oh, it's like, Vikings is, my dad still says to this day, the funniest day is of his fatherhood was when I told him I was a Vikings fan.
my dad routinely just clowns on me when the Chargers are playing because he is a Rams fan.
Oh, okay. And yeah, my dad is too.
It's not like great shakes or anything to be a Rams fan, but it's just
better like, than Chargers and
better
Vikings.
Better than being a Charger.
Yeah, my dad has actually been an incredible father. I love my dad a ton. But he's a monster for letting me make that decision. He's an awful, awful human being for saying, oh, yeah, go ahead. I need this perennial joke forever.
Well, now you know that's something that you won't let Avery do. So
yeah.
On that note.
No, I actually have been teaching her.
School. Oh, no. We're not doing this. You got to stop. You got to stop the Frozen rewatches, Kay. Clear all Norse Viking imagery away from the house.
I'm playing AC Valhalla right now.
Save your daughter. We cannot force the next generations to bear our sins. Cannot happen.
It's so adorable when she says skull, though.
No.
Adorable.
You're going to regret it. And she's going to tell these stories about you.
She's going to hop on my show that she inherits or something like that, because I've screamed about nepotism my entire career. And then I'm just going to hand over the keys to my child.
To be fair, it's going to happen in like 7 years.
She's going to hop on and say she hates her daddy because daddy told her to do skull when she was 2 years old.
Oh man.
On that note,
the things that Russell Westbrook leads us to. Yeah. So the Lakers are 21-21 at 500 for the 13th time this season. When will they get back there? Probably in two games. So
yeah.
Make sure you're subscribed to the Silver Screen Roll podcast so you can listen to us when that happens. And we'll be back next Wednesday.